Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory The Ranch Club, and Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.
It's 8:14 now, and joining me in the studio with a look at some of the issues discussed at yesterday's Park City School Board meeting and what the state legislature is up to, I have School Board Member Nancy Garrison along with Business Administrator Todd Hauber. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Nancy, the school board went ahead and hired a new band teacher to replace Derek Spitzer.
That's right. We approved that last night.
Now, is that just for the year, for the rest of the year, or does she have a...
No, it's a regular full-time hire.
Okay. And a name? Any information on her?
I can't remember the name.
I cannot remember her name.
Well, Nancy, also heard from a number of parents at yesterday's meeting. Parents still really concerned about the changes in the reading program. Are there concerns valid, or is it just that they're maybe afraid of change?
You know, anytime we get the opportunity to listen to community members, their concerns are absolutely valid. I would offer that there were 6 public comments made last night, 3 from former school reading aides and parents. And I think it's important to know that there are really great changes in the works for the benefit of our students. And while it looks different, and that's to your point on change, we need to look at some of the things that we have already seen working. We've seen some great success at Parley's Park Elementary. They're probably the school that has the furthest along the road with implementing the changes, and their mid-year performance is stellar. They're leading our district in performance. They're leading their own year-over-year performance. And, you know, that is because there's a lot of things that are going into the reading program in addition to changing the way aides work. But the focus is for those struggling readers to have the benefit of the very best, highest licensed educational professionals in the state. And I can say that with confidence because I work with classroom educators throughout the state, and when Park City teachers show up in graduate school, their thinking and their work is just exemplary. And so our kids will get that benefit of having those teachers be their primary reading instructors.
Well, let's talk about some of the concerns expressed. I mean, it seems that parents do support all-day kindergarten, but wonder about the kids that may be coming into the system after that and are not strong readers. So how are they going to be helped to be brought on track when the rest of the kids may have had full-day kindergarten?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, anytime you have a new program, there is that transitional year where those things come into play. We have some excellent professional development occurring so that our teachers are even more deeply trained in Tier 1 and Tier 2 instruction, which is that kind of instruction that struggling readers need. And so I'm really excited and confident about that. I'm really pleased to report and making sure that the community realizes we've hired 24 new teachers, classroom educators in the last several years. I have strong indication that the superintendent is looking to hire 8 more. And I'm also excited about the fact that our classified employees have expressed an interest in having every opportunity to shift to full-time where they can have benefits. And this change in the reading program does that. We shift from 22 part-time aides to 14 full-time benefited aides. And that really is working for our classified employees.
So what's the plan, though? I mean, that happens if any student is still having difficulty after kindergarten. I mean, I think that's one of the parents' concerns, is that there's not going to be the bodies to help.
So every elementary school has an interventionist, and an interventionist is a licensed educator with certification in gifted and talented, and they are incredibly well suited to differentiate and help the classroom teacher create the kinds of supportive lessons that will help those kids.
So do we have that same assistance, though, for second and third grades as well? Second and third?
They will have the same interventionist. They will also have a GAIT specialist. We are now calling that program PACE, but that is the support and coaching for our gifted and talented students. And then we also have in every elementary school are academic coaches, and they are, again, helping with that differentiation and making sure our classroom educators are well supported, and more importantly, that our readers are well supported, because this is all about making sure that all kids are performing and growing in English language arts. This is all designed for us to be able to say, yes, we've closed the achievement gap. There isn't a difference between our high income and low income, our English speaking and non-English speaking. And that's where we're headed.
Parents also worried that their kids are going to be stuck in front of technology. Curriculum Director Kathy Einhorn seems to think it's great, but parents really worried about taking away human interaction.
You know, I think you'd have to ask Dr. Einhorn about that, but that is not what I hear from her. What I know about the approach is that there are really effective tools that are technology-based and that kids are interested in participating with, but it is by no means a swap out for human and educator interaction. So that concern, I think that needs to really be heeded. And I think that we have rich ways to stimulate kids to learn that include technology.
So again, these 14 full-time people now, they're not all going to kindergarten. They're going to be spread out?
Exactly.
Amongst the grades and schools?
I'm not sure I can answer that right now because I haven't looked at how the staffing has been reallocated. But maybe you can speak to that, Todd.
Yeah, so primarily they will be in the kindergarten. So what we're looking at is going to the full-day kindergarten model. So some of those additional FTEs that Nancy talked about are the teachers that need to come on staff to handle the growth in that program. And then the aides that will come in and support at that kindergarten level are intended to go into the kindergarten primarily. Will that be the only thing they do? That will depend on how student needs are in each of the buildings, but that's the primary focus.
All right. Let's see. The Hold Child campaign continues. Each school presented what they're doing for counseling. Talk a little bit about what they're doing at Treasure Mountain. They sounded like they had some real fun things that they're doing to involve kids who tend to be more at risk.
I have to say our counselors throughout the district are doing amazing work. What we heard about last night from the Treasure Mountain counselors are the innovative ways they are engaging kids both academically and extracurricularly. So, for example, they have a DJ club, and they have raised money and invested in some great equipment. So if you were to walk into Treasure Mountain on a Friday afternoon, you would hear the zzz, zzz beat of the DJ club. And they outdoors hiking clubs, all kinds of ways to try to make sure that our junior high kids are engaged and making good choices.
At Ecker Hill, it seemed the discussion focused a lot on intervention, and it seemed a little bit surprising to find out how young kids that young are really having a lot of problems. I mean, is that normal for schools, or I mean, is it just getting younger and younger that kids start to talk about suicide? And
I think we need to let our professionals speak to that, whether it's normative. It seems normative to me when I look at small cohorts that come through Westminster. The percentage of mental health issues that my students have are just shocking. In a group of 20 in a cohort, I might have 3 or 4 with special needs around mental health issues. And so my perspective is that it is an epidemic issue that is not unique to our zip codes.
Board also starting to talk about where we're going to put a 5th-6th school?
Just barely. But I think what we have talked about is that we're going to use the retreat to sort of pull together all the data we have been collecting, which includes some input about what schools should look like in terms of whether they're local neighborhood schools or more campus-oriented, and we will be beginning that conversation on March the 15th.
All right. Todd, briefly, just a budget discussion is ongoing. It sounds like you've been tasked with getting more money into the classrooms and less out of the district office.
Correct. So we've been asked to take a look at those what are called non-instructional costs. Those are the ones that support the teachers and the students in the classroom and are the overhead costs of the district administration and school administrations. So we're looking into that for efficiencies. We did that pretty heavily in 2013. We went through a $3 million budget reduction, and a good portion of that did come from district and overhead type expenses. And so we'll revisit that again. Over the last 3 years, we've actually reduced school administration and district administration to make money for those 23 teachers that have come into the system since then. So it's a familiar exercise, and it'll be a good exercise for us to walk through.
Yeah, so, I mean, are we talking personnel? I mean, is that's really what makes up the administration?
They'll definitely come into the conversation. We're at the point where we start looking at programs. What programs are supported? How are they supported? The efficiencies that we might find may be minimal. You know, 10,000 here, 20,000 there. But if we're looking for large ticket items, we'll end up in the personnel ranks.
Yeah, so when we start talking about hiring new staff, do we have the money to fund that?
Yes, and so some of that will also come into play with what will happen out of the legislative session. You know, if that WPU comes in at 2.5% or higher percent, then there is an additional resource to manage those additional staffing needs.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about some of the issues that you're watching down at the state legislature. One, of course, is the charter school funding and how this is going to impact us here locally.
Yeah, so Senate Bill 38 is set up for discussion Thursday morning. That's tomorrow. Tomorrow morning. And a substitute came out late last night, so I was up late trying to appreciate all the nuances of that piece of legislation. But in essence, it still has the pieces that we're concerned about. We had hoped that the WPU value would have more than 2.5% in it, but there's still 1% equivalent of that WPU going into Senate Bill 38, which is designed to equalize money across school districts. In that draft of that bill, it looks like about $16 million might follow the same path as Senate Bill 97's money from last year. But there's some pushback right now on that bill because Senate Bill 97 promised some distribution that didn't materialize. And there were a number of rural districts that didn't participate at the level that they thought they ought to or that they were promised. And as we've looked into that formula, there is some disparity. It's not quite equalization as contemplated. So there's concern that putting more money into that distribution formula will just disequalize for the rurals. And so we'll see what conversations come out of that pushback.
Yeah.
But it did limit, in one sense, the original impetus of Senate Bill 38 was to get some money into the charter schools because their fundamental funding formula was changed to look just like a district, which meant they would lose about $6 million. This bill restores the $6 million so that there's a net zero impact to a charter school in that change, which I think was what everyone had anticipated to happen. All of this extra is just that. It's extra.
What about Powell's bill, though? Because he was basically saying, you know what? The state legislature set up charter schools. The state legislature needs to be responsible for funding them. And I think he's proposing basically just a tax increase that would fund charter schools.
Yeah, so House Bill 197 is that. And it's actually lined up for the same meeting as Senate Bill 38. They'll be back-to-back. And his bill is just that. It's looking at imposing a statewide property tax that would fund the charter schools. And I think there is some intent that his legislation is married into Senate Bill 38 so that as you look at the charter school funding formulas and you bring in the source of revenue for those formulas would be together as an agreement as opposed to running two different pieces of legislation. But it seems to at least be transparent that the taxpayers would understand how much of their taxes go into a charter school, what the responsibilities are of school districts in that process, and would be pretty clear. I think there's also some provisions in there that districts don't get a windfall in this change. There's a perception that if there's a higher property tax, that the districts will keep the money that otherwise would have gone to a charter, and that's not the intent. So we will have to reduce our taxes to adjust for the increase in the new levy that would be introduced. So there's a net zero impact to a district, no windfall, but the money still flows to charters.
Sounds like that would be the easiest solution, no?
Well, the devil's in the details. So it's trying to decide whether it's a statewide single levy, in which case districts will be contributing at different levels, or not districts, sorry, the communities would be paying taxes at different levels, or is it a unique tax to each district that goes into a pool of money that funds the charters? That latter example is the one that gets hard, especially if you want to have a no windfall impact for a school district, because we'd have to have a unique rate. You couldn't impose a statewide rate and get the same effect. So the details will have to be hammered out.
Right, because you'd get a lot more out of Park City.
Correct.
Yeah, got it. All right, and then another bill that you're watching, Senate Bill 45, and this has to do with what, keeping parents out of the deal for their kids being truant?
Yeah, so this is a continuation of last year's discussions on compulsory education. Last year, legislation went through called the Parents' Bill of Rights, and there were certain things that parents were able to decide in the course of their children's education, whether it was deciding what grade their child was enrolled in or whether they want to opt out of standardized or state-mandated tests. So in that vein, compulsory education was part of those discussions but didn't make it into that particular bill. This one is bringing up that discussion again, but from a different angle. So instead of addressing compulsory education straight on, it's looking at the consequences of children not attending. So it's seen as a parental right that a parent can choose not to have their child attend school and that there shouldn't be a consequence for it, which limits districts' abilities to provide compulsory education. There is some confusion on it in that parents have the ability to make those choices now today. They just talk with the district, say, my child's going to be hospitalized for medical conditions or treatment, and we bring to bear teaching and other resources to that child in their homebound settings or hospital settings so that none of their education suffers for their absence. Same thing happens with those that will take extended leaves of absence. So we have our winter athletes. We make accommodations before and after their seasons to help them stay on track with their academic goals. This bill actually addresses the truancy part, which is this is a parent who is deliberately not working with the school districts, not working with their children to have them attend school. So I can see that as a parental right, but the consequence is that it's a parent acting not in the best interest of their child. And I don't know that that's the scenario we're really trying to correct. We would like those children to come and have parental involvement in those children's lives. So it's kind of contentious as to, you know, is it really a parental right, or are we talking about a particular population that isn't receiving the support it should?
Do we have a problem of this in Park City?
Not on the truancy part.
Okay. Real quick, Nancy, have you decided whether or not you're running for re-election?
I have been doing a lot of talking with District 2 residents about that, Leslie. I find the work really gratifying. I think some of the best work in terms of rebuilding relationships with our various employee groups. I'm really pleased with that. I'm pleased with working in the community to sort of bridge the gap after the bond and have those folks teach me and me come along. So I'm weighing it carefully. The time commitment is a lot more than was ever forecast. You know, I would say it's at least 20 hours a week, you know, and that includes committee work and ad hoc work and preparation for meetings and outside research and you know, meetings with parents and community members. So I'm having to look at what the next 4 years looks like. And, you know, as long as someone is serving District 2 that is committed to the same vision that we've been working on for the last 4 years, that's what counts, because it's all about making sure kids are learning at high levels and that our community and staff relationships are in great shape.
Okay, so we'll know by March 10th, huh? Okay.
Indeed.
Nancy Harrison, Todd Halber, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
The Park City Council meets in a study session tomorrow starting at 2:30 in the studio. To preview the agenda, I have City Manager Diane Foster along with Assistant City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Diane, let's start with you. The council has some ongoing updates to strategic planning going into the council retreat next month and updates on community engagement. So this is the third of the 4 study sessions that have been planned. You think the council, new council members, are up to speed about what's going on here?
That's part of the reason why Jed Briggs, who is our operating budget manager, who is also does strategic planning, that's one of the reasons why he's doing these kind of 4 prelude sessions. They're actually quite in-depth. I shouldn't call them a prelude, but it is a prelude to the city council retreat on the 10th and 11th of March.
So this study session goal is to review, quote, the world-class multi-seasonal resort destination biennial strategic plan, as well as prioritized desired outcomes within the goal. What does that mean?
What it means is that council has 4 goals, and they're around, they all start with the community vision that was developed in 2009 by a process that involved over 500 people from the community. And that community said, keep Park City, Park City. And that as we understood the community say, meant as we grow and change, we want to hold dear those things that mean the most to us. And we want to make sure that the sense of community, the small town character, the natural setting, and the historic character of the community, that those are all preserved as we grow and change. So out of those, and out of those 4 kind of key elements of the community, City Council came up with 4 overarching goals, and those are long-term goals. So one of them is world-class multi-seasonal resort destination, which I think you may see City Council's already had some discussion about changing that, and maybe you'll see the word destination go to community.
Yeah, because some council members, I was going to say, have said they'd like to tweak that heading really to focus more on residents living here as opposed to the resort destination classification.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you'll see them want to do is actually find a balance. And that's the beauty of our community is, you know, I think sometimes we do hear people wanting to throw out the resort community altogether. And I think at the end of the day, we all benefit from all the things that the resort brings to us. And we all enjoy it. That's why we're here.
All right, so the community engagement session, I think, was skipped over maybe last meeting just due to a lack of time?
We did. We got into a lot of in-depth discussion on some other topics, so we moved it to here, and I think it's fine timing.
So what have you found out about why people don't engage?
You know, it's interesting. Most of the city council and myself and a number of key staffers, as well as elected officials, as well as county staff members, we're actually in a citizen participation training right now. And one of the things that we have learned, and I think we generally knew before, is that people come out when they need to come out. They trust their representatives that they've elected to represent them. And if there's an issue that is of particular importance to them, or they think maybe has an adverse effect on the community, then they'll come out and we'll hear their voice.
Last year, there were about 1,500 people, I think you figured out, that attended community engagement meetings throughout the year. Is that a good number, or is that disappointing?
It's a good number. It's a fantastic number. You look at the community size we have, and it's a fabulous number. There are communities that would just kill to have the numbers, the amount of public participation we have. And while that's a count of those who've participated in city activities, I think if you look overall at civic engagement, we have a much higher than average civic engagement in this community. And I think it's the number one thing that makes us different is that people do care about where they live, and they do make a difference in their community. Now, that being said, the mayor and city council absolutely want us to be doing more and to be engaging more wherever we can.
So you're employing this rule of 7, basically that somebody has to hear something 7 times for it to stick. Does it matter how it's heard?
Well, as you know, we didn't make that up. That is a generally held belief, and some studies have been done on that. And I actually spent 22 years in marketing. One of the things that we know is that if you can hear it through different channels, that's a good idea. So if you can hear it in person, if you can hear it from a neighbor, if you can read it in the newspaper, if you can hear it on the radio, it's better if it's a multi-channel communication.
All right. So, I mean, how does that affect what you guys do? I mean, do you have 7 different channels?
We do. Actually, if you just look at social media, we have all of those. You'll also see some new things coming online or new to the city. They're not new, but Matt and Phyllis and Craig have been working on adding videos to our website, for example, and just how looking at all the time, how are we engaging the community and how can we engage better? I will say we're always looking for feedback on that as well. So if people have input, this is a work session, and so the mayor often takes public input.
All right. Also, talk about a stormwater user fee. What are you proposing here?
So in December 2014, the city was notified that we are now going to be regulated as a what's called MS4. It basically means that we're now regulated for stormwater. We've had a stormwater system over the years, but now we have to do more formal things and be regulated by the state. So, for example, we're not regulated at the moment, and we already have 39 miles of pipe and 1,600 inlet boxes for stormwater. What'll be happening, and when the state came out and said you're going to be regulated in December 14, we asked for a year, an extra year to look at implementation. So that will go in effect in July. Some of the early elements that we have to put in place are additional infrastructure, but also a lot of education programs and things like that, helping the community to understand why it's important that we have a stormwater system. And the fee is around where we'll be basically creating a utility, so charging the people who are using the system the most, which is, I believe, the most appropriate use. It's kind of like a water utility. People who use it pay the most.
And so that's determined on basically your water bill, your water meter?
It's actually determined based on, and I'm by no means an expert in this area, but the surface area of your yard. And that is a calculated number, and all of the information is in the staff report about how that's calculated. And one of the terms that the community will become used to is the equivalent surface unit, or an ESU, and that is one of the ways that we calculate the stormwater fee.
Yeah, yards are one thing, though, right? I mean, just the water goes into the ground, into the grass, into the plants. I mean, parking lots seem like they're more of a problem, no?
Parking lots are included in that, and actually, stormwater regulation is very specific around how you manage parking lots and what the surface of the parking lot is, and is it a permeable surface or an impermeable surface.
All right. Do we have a ballpark figure that we can tell people?
If you look in the staff report, there are some numbers about what the cost per unit is. I'm just flipping through the staff report now and seeing if I can find the single-family residential pricing. There are actually multipliers. Okay. I can't give you exact numbers,
okay.
Sorry.
That's fine. We'll look into it. And Matt, let me turn to you real quick now. The nightly rental bill, I mean, this is something that the city has been keeping an eye on. Last we heard from Craig Powell, he seems to think that it's died down, and he sponsored a bill that would fix problems. Is that the case?
Well, sort of. I think that was the hope, is that it's late enough in the session where I think we're almost three-fourths of the way through the session. There's a little less than 2 weeks left, that it was pretty late to introduce a bill. The mayor, Councilmember Bierman, and myself were at the Capitol on Monday and sort of were pulled out of a meeting around noon, and it was the first time that we had seen the language of the bill. We had seen a few interim drafts, but it was the first time we'd actually seen the language. So the good news is, and I think what Representative Powell was alluding to, is that it is fairly late in the session to be introducing new language that hasn't made its way through committee. That being said, it's a very well-respected member of the House of Representatives that's introducing the bill. He is the co-chairman of Business and Labor Committee, and clearly, given that position, he's a friend of leadership, and so there is an inkling that he could get the bill through committee, and it could be heard on the floor of the House of Representatives. The compromise, I think, would be that the bill sponsor, to be fair to him, is he would say, all my bill does. excuse me, is introduce a year moratorium. So it would be a sort of a stay on any further nightly rental regulations statewide. It would preclude any sort of additional enforcement or inspections, which we would obviously oppose. But to be fair to the bill sponsor, his position would be all this is a one-year moratorium. we're obviously concerned about it. We strongly believe our legislative platform, our guidelines, all the community work we do in terms of local control, allowing residents and citizens and taxpayers and voters to determine how we plan our community, how we contemplate our neighborhoods. So to have the state come in and just at a top-down level make a determination, allow a use in particular areas of our community, we would obviously be opposed to that. I will say, for the benefit of your listeners, we are under the impression, and I have actually met with the bill sponsor himself, this is not about Park City. Park City is actually fairly permissive when it comes to nightly rental. We understand how important that component is to our economy and to certain aspects of our community. But there are some areas we've planned intentionally, and the neighbors have come out and been part of our general planning process and land management code process, where they said we don't want them in our neighborhood. And so that's the reason that we're opposed to it. Just that premise of being able to plan for our community, having a participatory process, and the counter to that, having the state come in and sort of mandate something. So we're strongly opposed to that.
Okay, and the sponsor is who?
It's Representative Notwell, and he's out of Riverdale. And he, you know, we have met with him personally, myself, the mayor, Councilmember Bierman, and Diane. So he has been very gracious, but I think we have sort of a fundamental disagreement about this issue.
And the bill's been numbered what, so people want to follow along?
It's House Bill 409, and I would encourage people, if you live in a neighborhood in Park City where nightly rentals are not allowed or nightly rentals have been an issue, this is a good bill to watch, and perhaps contact myself or contact your representative or our state senator, who have also been very helpful. Representative Powell and Senator Van Tassel have been very helpful with the city on this.
Okay. Matt, Diane, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, the Project for Deeper Understanding is planning its next community forum, this time taking on the topic of our political system. In the studio with details, I have Project members Charles Robinson and the topic's moderator, Mike Andrews, and on the phone, Daniel Edward Patterson, a PhD candidate in political science at the University of Utah. So good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Leslie.
So good morning.
Charles, when and where?
Tomorrow night, Thursday night, 7 o'clock at St. Luke's.
Okay. And Mike, why this topic? I mean, is it what we've seen in Congress, not being able to pass bills, or is it what we're seeing in the presidential campaign?
Well, Leslie, what we're going to try to do is avoid talking about specific candidates, and what we're more concerned about is how our political system at a national and a state level has gotten to the point where people are either very angry and voicing that anger in the primaries, as we've seen, or they have literally dropped out of the political system. For example, here in Utah in 2014, only 28% of the eligible voters cast a ballot in the congressional elections. And our presidential participation has been dropping ever since the 90s, and now it's below 60%. And in other words, 43% of Utahns in the last presidential election decided it wasn't worth their time. And what we'll be trying to look at is what are the systemic causes of the anger and the dropping out of the political system.
So, Daniel, you're the expert. I mean, what's your take? Does our political system have problems? I mean, as my colleague Rick Bruff said, if you threw a rock, you'd probably hit one.
Well, the system certainly does have problems, but I think you've made a very good point in that the biggest challenge that we face right now is participation. There's certainly a vacuum left when voters aren't getting out and making their voices heard. These type of conflicts and challenges have been a constant throughout both, you know, American history as well as just political history in general. But the deciding factor that really makes the biggest influence is when people actually exercise their rights and get out and participate and make their voices heard. When that doesn't happen, then I think you see other groups and parties that step in that can take advantage of that, and you see a rise in your super PACs, the influence of money, and a lot of other things that end up consequently angering citizens.
Yeah, and well, when you look at places like here in Utah or in California, I mean, where we've got supermajority Republican legislature here in Utah, or, you know, I mean, just the Democratic influence in California, I mean, you can talk all you want, but how are you going to change that?
Well, there are definitely problems that come in terms of redistricting, the gerrymandering, and how it gets broken up. But I think one of the things, and when he spoke of our a few moments ago about our participation, one of the interesting facts too here in Utah is that of the roughly 2 million eligible voters, only about a little over a million are registered, and of those, almost 600,000 are unaffiliated. And in a state so predominantly kind of led by one particular party. What that suggests is that there's, you know, over 500,000 people that feel like that their voice isn't being heard, that they don't, that there's no point in, you know, kind of aligning themselves with any one particular party. And I think that that kind of apathy and that kind of feeling left out of the process simply opens the door for those with the loudest voices to make a big influence.
Is there a person in American politics today that you think has the confidence and trust that Americans can get behind?
All Americans?
Yeah.
No. No, I don't think so. But I think that's, you know, part of the benefit of our system is that it is pluralist, and that there are a variety of views and beliefs and ideologies. But I think what we are seeing increasingly is a divide that separates those ideologies, and we're not getting out to deliberate. We're not getting out to try to find a common ground. And I think you're seeing that reflected in the type of candidates that we have now. They're very polarized. And I don't think at this point we've seen a candidate that both Democrats and Republicans could both get behind. Now, one of the interesting things that we've seen in the current situation, interestingly, I've seen a number recently in New York Times and Washington Post where very staunch Democrats are actually voicing and expressing their opinion that they should the only way to stop a candidate like Trump would be to actually change affiliation to the Republican Party to cast their vote for somebody more moderate than Trump. So, you know, I think we're seeing very polarized figures that are in the candidacy right now, and that makes it much harder to get any one leader that the majority of Americans can get behind.
And what's the media's role in all of this? I mean, we don't have the Walter Cronkite that we did, you know, 40 years ago.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think there are a couple of things historically. I think beginning in the 1920s, the FCC had the Fairness Act or Fairness Doctrine that basically considered broadcast a public good. A public service, and they place certain requirements regarding news that any political or polarizing issues had to be represented, had to have equal representation. Now, that didn't mean within a given broadcast, but let's say a particular radio station would have to be able to give time to both sides of a given polarizing issue. Well, that doctrine was actually repealed in the 80s, and as a result, you saw a dramatic rise in the type of very polarized political media that we have now. They do play a big role because those arguments frame and shape how citizens perceive conflict, how they perceive issues, how they perceive the state of whether it's the local or state or federal government. So they play an enormous role in shaping opinions, especially when citizens aren't actively involved in the process. They rely on the media to kind of distill what they need to know. And if it's coming from polarized opinion, it really shapes, it has a big impact on political outcomes.
Okay. I need to leave it at that. But again, you'll continue the discussion tomorrow, 7
yes,
o'clock at St. Luke's?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks all for your time.
Well, thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:55. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, that time of year when the deadline for early registration for Running With Ed is approaching, in the studio with details from the Park City Education Foundation, I have Jen Bello along with Sean Beard. He's this year's volunteer team recruiting chairman. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So when is Running With Ed this year, Jen?
So it's May 21st, which sounds later, but that it's always the third Saturday in May. So May 21st, and that seems like a little ways away, especially in Park City time where we all do everything last minute. But if you register by Friday, it's our early bird registration that's the last, or not by Friday, excuse me, by Monday, the 29th, because it's leap year.
That's right.
So we get the extra day. So you have an extra day. You register by Monday, and you'll save some money. And you don't need your team altogether. So if you know you're going to run, go ahead and buy your team. And then you can, you know, do all your planning with your costumes and who's going to run what leg and all of that.
Okay, the cost of a team for so early registration?
So $375 for a team of five, or $75 a person, because you can have a team of up to 10 people and everybody run one leg. So you can have a team of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10, $75 a person. That saves you, you know, a little bit off the regular price of $80 a person. So if you have a 5-person team, it'll save you $25. If you have a 10-person team, it'll save you $50. Who doesn't like to save money? And it helps us because we can plan for all the swag, the t-shirts, all of that stuff a lot better if everyone doesn't register the last day in April.
All right. Are there any opportunities for people who don't have a team that would like to run? Do you have some kind of, you know, smorgasbord team?
You know, we will as we get closer to the race. We're not quite ready to do that at this point in time. Definitely on our Facebook page. We try to put teams together, and people email us every year. I need a team, and then people will email us, oh my gosh, someone just tore their ACL, I need a teammate. So we do that, but we're not quite ready for that yet.
Okay, and then Sean, I mean, you're heading up all the volunteers because it takes a bunch of you, huh?
Well, we have plenty of volunteers, can always use more.
Yes.
As we grow. We're looking to sell this out. That is our goal. I am team recruitment, going out to local businesses and encouraging them to get involved. It's a great team building opportunity. It's a feel good day. It's a not miss opportunity, I mm-hmm. think, in Park City. It's one of those events that happens annually here that makes Park City a special place. So if you haven't done it, I really encourage people to give it a try. The value is amazing. I mean, $400 for a team of five, $80 a person, that's in the swag bag alone pays for that. We have a party afterwards with music and bouncy houses and beer gardens, and it's out at the rec center, and it's an event not to miss.
And the number of teams that you need to be a sellout is what?
So it's 400 would be in terms of parking. Our first goal is 200, because that's about how many people we can fit into the field house at a time. It's a wave start, so people, you know, come and go in waves. And we had 198 teams last year, so we're two away from that first 200 goal. But parking wise, the city and county would let us have up to 400. So that's
400 participants.
Yes.
Yes.
No, 400 teams. We have 1,500 participants. We had 1,200 last year. We're planning on 1,500. That's about 3,000, and that's the limit of our parking. And then we have to do something different. But the great thing about with businesses doing it is it's a great way and an inexpensive way to show your employees a really good time.
Okay, real quick, people register where?
Runningwithed.com.
Okay, and again, do it by Monday, and you'll save yourself some money.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, hey, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
Jen Billow and Sean Beard again with Running for Ed. KPCW News Time now, 9 o'clock.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory the Ranch Club, and Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.